The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
First off, I want to say how grateful we should be that we have you at Relevant Radio along with Father Rocky and all the other people that are on the radio. You do so much for us.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logmanis in for Drew while he takes a little time off for vacation. And I love covering these stories with great guests like Roger Severino from the Ethics and Public Policy Center on the lawsuit filed, nurse, pro-life Catholic nurse, being tricked by her hospital into, by a doctor in particular, into being complicit in helping with an abortion. And that completely violated her conscience and beliefs. And the doctor threatened that he would not only end her career, but take away her license. Take her job, take her license. And so she filed suit and DOJ got involved. And wow, these are the stories you need to know about. So we're going to pivot a bit to other stories. So you, how much do you hear in a day's time about COVID? It depends on where you tune into in broadcasting or look at online as to whether that information is helpful, not helpful. People are at each other in arguments about COVID and how to deal with it. Masks, not masks, mandates, no mandates, whatever. There are other parts of the world, Europe in some countries, are back to lockdowns or restricted movement, restricted gatherings of people. It's just, it's still a global thing, and especially because of the pernicious Delta variant. So with that Delta variant, in fact, making its rounds, surges are continuing to hit new numbers, high numbers. Political and other leaders around the country, you're probably hearing, are taking different kinds of action to combat it, whether at the municipal, state, or federal level. Mask mandates are coming back in many places. And a number of major businesses are telling their employees that they have to start masking up again. A lot of people are objecting to those renewed mandates. But the real controversy is happening in New York City, where Mayor Bill de Blasio has said that anyone who wants to get into a restaurant, ballpark, or gym, or a movie theater has to show that he or she has been vaccinated. Fox News reported that the New York Auto Show has been canceled because of the resurgence. And there are indications that President Joe Biden is tiptoeing his way towards some kind of national vaccine mandate. National vaccine mandate. He's already imposed one for all federal employees, but he's being excoriated in conservative circles because he hasn't done anything to shut down the border where thousands of migrants are coming across with any kind of testing at all and are being released into communities near the border. There's so much going on there that we should be talking about. The welfare and well-being of children there. The vulnerability to trafficking and the abuse. And there's just so much there. And then there's the spread of COVID. This just doesn't help anyone. So thousands of migrants are coming across the border with no testing and are being released into communities near the border because the government doesn't have enough facilities to house them. We've seen that. We've reported on that, especially when these children are in cramped quarters and other people are adults and with just heinous conditions. And other humanitarian groups aren't being allowed in to help them. But that's another story. We've covered that. What this one is about is it's being reported in McAllen, Texas, right next to the Mexican border. They have reported that 7,000 COVID-19 positive migrants have been released into their community. 7,000 released into their community since February, including 1,500 in the last week, 1,500 in the last week. And now Mexico is saying they're not going to take any migrants back because of the surge in the Delta variant. Dr. Robert Tabali's here. He practices in adult and pediatric infectious diseases in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. He's also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. Dr. Tabali, welcome back. This is so important, this Delta variant surge. By the day, there are more questions. By the day, there are more news stories. This is particularly pernicious, as I called it. I can't think of a better word right now, the Delta variant. And there's now talk about another shutdown. Did the last one do anything to stem the spread of this disease?
Well, when we have shutdowns, it only forestalls the inevitable. And I'm afraid everyone's going to get an education on the Greek alphabet, you know, over the next few months.
I know.
And I'm not sure that this is really as warranted as what's happening. You know, we are, if you look at the data across the country, we are in the midst of the beginning stages of a third wave here in the United States. The first wave was very long. It had multiple peaks in it, but it lasted for quite a few months. And then we had a second peak, and now we're entering a third peak fueled by the Delta variant, which is far more infectious than the earlier variants. Something that we talked about a year ago, the R-naught value, R sub-zero, that's how many people will get infected from one person that has the coronavirus infection. It's used commonly in other types of infections and so on. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes you see 1-to-1, and you know, when it's when you have an R-naught value greater than 2, it means the disease is expanding relatively quickly. But the R-naught value for the initial outbreak, I thought was going to be about 4, but it was actually ended up about 2-to-3. The R-naught value estimated now for the Delta variant is 8.
That means
one person infected with the coronavirus Delta variant can infect 8 other people. And it's clearly an airborne issue. Now, we talk about droplet precautions, so when you sneeze or cough, you knock out droplets. And airborne particles are lighter than droplets, and they can stay in the air suspended for a prolonged period of time. And that's kind of why we're seeing these great numbers with Delta. Now, people say, gosh, you know, I was vaccinated, and I'm seeing all these cases, and they're talking about vaccinated people need to put masks on and everything like that. The reason why the impact on the vaccinated people is because most everybody that got vaccinated had a good response to the vaccine. Most everybody, very few people didn't. But the vaccination doesn't protect you from getting infected, per se. It protects you from getting severe illness or death. That's what it protects you from.
Mm-hmm.
So what they found and what exploded on the scene a week ago, a few days ago, was that people that are vaccinated using the messenger RNA technology and so on, if they get infected with Delta virus, they can be just as infectious as to somebody else as someone who never had the vaccination. However, they often, when they have the infection, the vaccinated person will be relatively asymptomatic. However, they can be a super spreader. So a lot of the places around the country where people aren't vaccinated, those are the targets of this Delta variant, the people that are not vaccinated. Those are the people that are going to be at risk of getting sick, severely ill, and possibly dying. And we're seeing more and more younger people in their 20s and 30s getting seriously ill with coronavirus. This is a group of people that we and they thought were relatively invincible to the coronavirus.
Right.
So it's changing its target. But I'm not sure that lockdowns will not be successful for the goal of preventing infection. What they do is they actually spread out the course of the infection over a longer period of time. It gives you time to do things. And what is the time to do things here? Well, the government says to get vaccinated. Now, you know, unfortunately, we're entering into this binary society where you're either vaccinated or you're not. And natural infection with naturally developed immunity is not factored in at all.
Right.
And the listeners of this program know I've been talking about Novavax for a very long time here. And that's a vaccine that's very protective, but has very, very low side effects. And unfortunately, for Novavax, the Pfizer vaccine and Moderna have applied for full authorization from the FDA, and that's anticipated in early September. And what happens then is that closes the window of opportunity for any other vaccine to be approved on emergency use authorization. Once there's a product in the market that can address a certain need, they don't give emergency use authorization to other similar products.
Mm.
So
I wanted to jump in on one thing about that. When you say Novavax, I know you said that last time we talked just a couple weeks ago, and people were really keenly interested in that. By the way, the number here for Dr. Tabali, if you have COVID questions, and who doesn't? I mean, even members of the government, even members of the CDC sometimes, I think, you know, are still trying to wrap their heads around this in other departments. But nonetheless, Dr. Tabali, 888-914-9149. Dr. Tabali, I want to follow up on what you just said about Novavax having very few or relatively very few side effects. Didn't I just hear you say that a short time ago about both Pfizer and Moderna having relatively few side effects in the large population of people who've gotten them?
When you look at the broad base of people who are vaccinated, yes, the incidence of adverse reactions in the Moderna and Pfizer are very low. When you consider that, you know, 180 million people have been vaccinated or more, you know, 300 million doses have been given or more. But some of the reactions are very severe. And so by comparison, the Novavax, although the trials are smaller than having hundreds of millions of people being vaccinated, the incidence of very severe side effects or side reactions or adverse reactions appears to be far less than the Novavax. It's kind of a model of what happened with the polio vaccination. And first, polio was an inactivated virus, the Salk vaccine. And then we switched to oral drops on the tongue, which were a weakened strain of the polio virus. And that had the added advantage of it would cause a low-grade infection in children. When they would poop out lots of the same virus, and people downstream in underdeveloped countries where they had contaminated water supplies, the children, when they drank the water, they would indirectly get vaccinated. So you give the vaccine to one person, and 10 children downstream would get a protection from polio. But then there came a time when there was less and less polio, and what happened was the incidence of vaccine-associated polio, which is very rare, but it does happen. So giving the vaccine and causing polio became more common than naturally occurring polio. And so there was a paradigm shift where we stopped using the oral weakened, attenuated live vaccine, and we started using inactivated vaccine again. Now, we're not really at that point with coronavirus, but a lot of the people that don't want to be vaccinated, there's some people that are definitely anti-vaccination, don't want to be vaccinated for any reason, and I don't think we're going to change any minds there. But there's a lot of people that are very nervous about the vaccine because they've read about you know, the young people that get myocarditis from it, or older people that get blood clots from a different type of vaccine, and I've taken care of a number of people, and I'm sure it's a small group, but I've had very serious problems from the messenger RNA vaccines. And I'm still, you know, the numbers are still small of having serious problems from it, and I strongly recommend the vaccines to people.
Yeah,
I wish we had the Novavax option for people who are vaccine hesitant at this time, because I think that their hesitancy would oftentimes melt away, you know, once they were presented with that more traditional-based vaccine option.
Dr. Tabali, a number of listeners have called in asking when Novavax is coming. I know you just said a short time ago that might be set back now with both Pfizer and Moderna going for emergency use authorization for what, a booster shot or something?
Well, they're going for full FDA approval, which means they're going to leaving the emergency use authorization, and they're going to be fully approved vaccinations, just like every other vaccine that your child might get or you might get if you're going to travel or whatever. But they are, they're also looking at a booster. They're looking at data about the need for a booster after a certain period of time. I don't have that data in front of me, but it appears that, you know, clearly we're going to be suffering with this coronavirus problem for quite some time. This is never really going to go away. This is going to kind of melt into the background like seasonal cold viruses and seasonal influenza. And we're going to have to get immunized every year and so on for coronavirus and different strains of coronavirus and so on. But
so once it's endemic, like flu, as you say, even colds, but the annual flu shots and so forth, you see that down the road for coronavirus?
I do, and we'll probably be seeing a combination influenza and coronavirus booster shots or annual vaccinations in mm-hmm. in the future. Maybe not this season, this flu season, but in the flu seasons to come.
Well, okay. We have some callers, Dr. Tabali. The number here is 888-914-9149. Slip of the mind for a moment. 888-914-9149. Maggie from Buffalo Grove, Illinois is on hold. Maggie, go ahead. Thanks for calling.
Hi, doctor. Thank you. I always love when you're on. I trust your information very much, so thank you for being there.
That's great.
I had the virus. I had the virus back at Christmas time, and I continually get antibody tests, and my doctor says my antibodies are very high. And then, so I'm wondering if I really need to get this vaccination in order to avoid the Delta virus. Am I prone to the Delta virus, Delta variant with high antibodies?
Well, I try to use an allegory to explain, what the virus attaches to the cell by talking about an ice cream cone. And you can have different types of ice cream on the top of the cone, but the base of the cone, being the same, every ice cream cone having the same cone, that's where the coronavirus would plug in. So if the coronavirus is like an ice cream cone with either vanilla or maple walnut or chocolate or strawberry or whatever, those are the different variants, but they still attach to the same receptor on the human cells. And that's where the antibodies are directed that you develop with the vaccination. And that's where your natural immunity, your humoral immunity, your antibody immunity, that's one of the major targets where you've developed antibodies. And so you having had natural immunity, I would tell you that you are, quite protected against coronavirus. You shouldn't consider yourself invincible. You can still get, you can get infected, and you could have an asymptomatic case or a very low symptomatic case, similar to what a vaccinated person would have. You will have some very good degree of immune function against getting another type of strain or variant of the coronavirus. A lot of the data that's come out is data on persons who've been vaccinated. We know that if you have natural immunity, survived a case of coronavirus, you get one shot of the Pfizer, just one shot, it raises your antibody levels 140 times.
Wow.
That's more than 100 times. And then it increases your T cell or the natural killer cells, the other arm of your immune system. It raises that by about five times the level of activity. So, that's one of the things that can cause, if you get serial vaccinations, like you get two shots or three shots, that's wherein you could have a problem maybe with an adverse reaction from kind of an augmented immunity issue, having too much immunity. The authorities, the CDC and so on, has not changed their structure of understanding about who needs to get what kind of vaccinations and what kind of series. What does that mean? That means that it's all the same. It's cookie cutter. To get vaccinated, you have to have two shots, the Moderna or Pfizer. Doesn't matter. Like you've got paper proof that you've got antibody production. If you were to get a vaccine series in the future with this type of situation, they might likely say you only need one shot. But right now, today, in the beginning of August in 2021, in order to get your vaccine passport or be able to go to a restaurant or a bar in New York City, Bill de Blasio is going to say, you can't go anywhere. You can't go anywhere because you haven't been vaccinated. You say, well, I've got natural immunity. That's just as good as vaccine. And that's what Dr. Tabali says, and de Blasio goes, I don't know, Dr. Tabali. You need to have a vaccine passport that says that you had two shots or else you can't circulate in New York City. And unfortunately, that's kind of what's coming down the road here. And
it is.
Well,
it is. Dr. Tabali, it's coming down the road with all these variants, and especially how – nasty the Delta variant is. I like that you stated something I've thought of the last time you were on when you brought up the Lambda variant. We'll get into that in a little bit because we have callers on the line holding for you. But I thought, wait, the Greek alphabet, people need to know how the Greek alphabet is not like the English alphabet, of course, because their letters don't go A, B, C, D like that. So so between the Delta variant and Dr. Tabala, you were the first person I ever heard mention the Lambda variant. I thought, wait, and I thought, how many letters of the alphabet are there? So I checked it. There are 6 letters of the Greek alphabet between Delta and Lambda. And I'll ask you in a little bit, because listeners want to ask you their questions, how we got from Delta to Lambda and skipped 6. We didn't. I'm sure we didn't skip them. I'm sure they're out there. You know about them. But right now, I want to go to Kim in Minneapolis, who's been on hold, and take that call. Let's go to Veronica in Albuquerque. Veronica in Albuquerque. We have a number of calls. We'll get to you, Kim.
Hi. Hi.
Hi, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. My concern is my husband. He's 70 years old, doesn't have a spleen, and only has the large intestine or the small intestine. His diet is limited because of the risk of obstructive bowel syndrome. So he of yet has not received the vaccine because I'm hesitant. I'm afraid he'll have a reaction to the vaccine. That's my question is, should he or should he not take a vaccine?
Does your husband have a history of allergies or serious allergies to things?
No.
So if he doesn't have a history of serious allergies, then he'd likely do okay with getting the vaccine. You know, when we talk about these side effects, even me focusing on like myocarditis in children and other problems, you know, we're talking about maybe 7/10,000 of 1%. So that's a very, very small number.
Oh.
People that get the shot and they have a problem with it right off the bat, they usually have an allergy to the envelope of the virus the messenger RNA preparation. It's polyethylene glycol, and that's the same thing that I'm sure your husband probably doesn't need this, but when people have go to get a colonoscopy, they take something like Go Lightly or a prep where they need to drink like gallons of this fluid. That's actually polyethylene glycol. And some people that drink that have allergies to it. It's usually not absorbed in most situations. But that's a major issue with, you know, the initial sudden problems with the vaccine. There are other people, like, you know, the ones I talked about that I see that have had problems. They're few in number by comparison to the mass of people that have been vaccinated. So your husband being 70, you know, there's a risk reward, and without a spleen, there's a risk reward that's involved in getting the vaccination. And, you know, to be honest, your husband would be at far greater risk from getting natural infection to coronavirus than he would be from any reaction to the vaccine. Now, there's a lot of people that say, you know, aborted fetal cells and so on. Johnson & Johnson and AstraZeneca vaccine are actually made in a broth of those immortal fetal cells that were harvested from an abortion back, you know, 50 years ago. But the Moderna and Pfizer vaccines, they were not designed, made, constructed in any form or fashion with those fetal cells, but they were tested against them.
And that's really good information to get out there, because I know a lot of people, Dr. Tabali, worry about that. We have a number of callers on the line. I want you all to know we'll get to you. Coming up for Dr. Robert Tabali on COVID questions next.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
The faith, news of the day, politics, economics, and family issues. It all matters to you, and it matters here, too. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
We'll do it live.
Here, we're here with the Drew Mariani Show. You're here on the Drew Mariani Show with me. A lot of you are callers on hold, and I will try to get to all of you because I've got Dr. Robert Tabalian for a COVID-19 update, and that's, boy, if not by the day, by the hour, by the day, we're getting new, some are facts, and some are opinions, and some are news stories. And they really cause us a lot of concern and a lot of confusion. So people want clarity, and Dr. Tabali's here for that. He practices in adult and pediatric infectious disease in the northwest suburbs of Chicago, and he's a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois. We're talking, as he does when he comes in, about COVID-19, the Delta variant in particular. I keep calling it that pernicious thing. It's just very nasty. All the breakthrough contagion you're hearing about, when they use that term breakthrough, that means that Delta variant has broken through people who have been vaccinated and has gotten through anyway. As Dr. Tabali pointed out, and a lot of the things you'll read online or hear on the news point out as well, that when it's a breakthrough and somebody's been vaccinated but catch it anyway, they either may not have symptoms but be contagious, or they may have symptoms but they'll be, far milder than they would have. I mean, you can't call anything mild if somebody's suffering, but far milder than they would have been had they not been vaccinated. And young adults, very much so, are in this group because unvaccinated people getting the Delta variant could wind up very, very sick in the hospital, or as you said, doctor, it can be fatal. Whereas vaccinated people who get it can be sick, probably less long, right? And probably not to the degree where they would need hospitalization. It's just their body is fighting it off, and that's the vaccine working. Is that pretty much an analysis that's correct?
Yeah, that's a pretty good analysis. Yeah, the vaccine gives your body's immune system a template with which to fight the infection when you get it. Mm-hmm. And so it stops it and clamps it down at a very, very early stage and doesn't let it run rampant. And so a lot of people, if they're vaccinated and they get infected, they have a sore throat, maybe some sniffles, a very mild cold, or maybe a little more than a mild cold, but they don't get seriously ill where they can't breathe or have other significant problems. All these problems that we talk about with vaccines, blood clots and neurologic issues and other problems, they're all much more common with natural infection. So, that's another thing to keep in mind. If you get a natural infection with COVID, I have quite a few patients. I just saw a study today about long COVID. In a British study, 13.3% of all patients that get COVID have symptoms for more than 4 weeks. About 5% have symptoms for more than 8 weeks or longer. There's some patients that I have that have had symptoms for going on close to a year now, where they have overwhelming chronic fatigue type syndrome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I hear that fatigue is a very big indicator that somebody has caught this, even as a breakthrough case when they've been vaccinated. And then the other things you said, runny noses, coughs, and so forth, but not anywhere near what people get when they aren't vaccinated and they catch the Delta variant. We've got a lot of calls for you, Dr. Tabali. I'm Sheila Logminas in for Drew. Dr. Tabali's here, Robert Tabali, answering questions about COVID-19 and the Delta variant and vaccinations and mandates for masking, both outdoors and indoors, especially indoors. And New York Mayor Bill de Blasio saying anyone who wants to get into a restaurant, ballpark, gym, or movie theater has to show that he or she has been vaccinated. It's a range of different kinds of reaction to this in municipalities and states across the country, and we're trying to stay on top of it, covering the news. We're going to go to Kim in Minneapolis now. She's been on hold for a while. Kim, go ahead.
Hi. My question is, has the mRNA ever been used in human beings before? And the spike proteins, once you get the jab, how long do those spike proteins stay attached to your cells or to your DNA?
Well, the way the messenger RNA vaccine works is that it basically, when you get the injection, some of that messenger RNA is picked up by some of your cells. It does not enter the nucleus. It does not become part of you. It does not enter your DNA. But what it does is, outside the nucleus, in the cytoplasm of the cell. So if, like if a cell is, looks like an egg that's frying and the yolk is the nucleus and the white is the cytoplasm, that's kind of where all the protein synthesis in the cells goes on, is out in that white part, the cytoplasm. That's where the messenger RNA works, and it takes over some of the cellular machinery and makes that spike protein. It's a messenger RNA is a template for making it, just like sewing a dress. Okay, so it makes that stuff. So that is the the part of which, from the virus, that sticks to the ACE receptor on your cells. That's where the virus sticks to your human cells, this thing called an ACE receptor. So that spike protein that's made from your cells after the messenger RNA vaccine, there's a certain amount that's made, and I don't know that anybody knows how long that hangs around in your body, but there's a constant turnover of cellular material in your body. I don't think that lasts too long. I can tell you that the messenger RNA doesn't last very long. I can't tell you exactly how long the spike protein lasts because I have not seen a study on that. the spike protein that you get from a natural infection is not free and floating spike protein like you get from a vaccine, but it's attached to the virus, and you would have a lot more of that in a natural infection by far than you would by getting a vaccination. So I wouldn't be too concerned about the spike protein hanging out in your body. I'm afraid I forgot the other aspect of your question.
I think you answered the question well, and people need to know about that spike protein. You've explained T cells, the attack cells, and the things that kill off the bad. I look at it, doctor. I know this is really simplistic, but when people are vaccinated, it forms defenses. So you think of the good guys in there putting on their armor and defenses. I know this is, you can explain it this way to children, right? And then the infection comes along, that ugly, we've seen it for what, a year and a half now, that coronavirus image we have of the blue ball with the red spike things and so forth, that comes in, the bad guys. And so the good guys are fighting the bad guys, and spike proteins, in fact, that gets into a question I had about people who are vaccinated and whether they have no symptoms but being contagious, or they have some symptoms that they do suffer from, but they're not nearly as bad as if they had been unvaccinated. That depends on the viral load, right? And the viral load is what? How much of it they caught? How much direct contact they had with a contagious person, or what?
Everyone's different, and some people can contain an infection. Like me being a, pediatrician, part of my practice, there's four other circulating coronaviruses that we encounter on a regular basis that cause colds and sometimes more serious infections in children. And so, like your pediatrician or family doctor who's gotten infected with those, 5 or 10 times in their career, their body would be primed a little bit and have maybe a more brisk response to an infection and cause it to be tempered quite a bit compared to somebody who's never seen that type of infection before. So a lot of people, if they're not vaccinated right now, they worry, is there anything that I can do to help myself? I'm not going to get a vaccine. But, I bang the drum all day long about taking vitamin D3. I think everybody should be taking at least 4,000 units a day and zinc. The survivability of people with coronavirus that have normal levels of vitamin D in their body, much, much higher than people that have low levels of vitamin D. So that's one thing you can do for yourself and anybody that you care about is making sure they take vitamin D3. And people that are dark-skinned, because of the pigment of their skin, they can actually have very, very low levels of vitamin D in their body. So if you're a West African or dark-skinned Hispanic person or a dark-skinned Italian or whatever, you want to take vitamin D. Don't think that just because you're working outdoors you're going to have normal levels of vitamin D. But that supplementation might be, in hindsight, might be one of the most important things in survivability with serious infection with coronavirus.
I've heard other doctors bring up vitamin D and its importance. Doctor, we have a lot of calls. Dr. Tabali is here. I'm Sheila Logmanis in for Drew. He's talking about, doctor is talking about the COVID-19 update and especially the Delta variant, vaccinations, mask mandates, and so forth. And we have a lot of calls for you. David in Wisconsin's been holding. Let's go to David. David, thanks for calling.
Hi, thanks for taking the call. I had Guillain-Barré syndrome 40 years ago, and I haven't done vaccinations ever since then. But every time I get a fever, I get a little recurrence of the Guillain-Barré. What are the, are there alternatives? Is there a way I can get a waiver? Is it good for people like me?
With your history, thanks for the questions. Excellent question. With your history of Guillain-Barré, which is a kind of an autoimmune illness that kind of takes away the insulation on nerve fibers and renders them unable to send nerve signals or conduct signals down the nerve, that is a medical condition wherein you should not be vaccinated. Now, that being said, developing a natural infection, you might have even a higher incidence of potential of having Guillain-Barré after a natural infection as opposed to a vaccine. But since you've had that already, absolutely, you shouldn't be vaccinated. And we've oftentimes considered family members who've had Guillain-Barré, say that you had some, you know, a group of family, a family with a group of children, and one of the children had Guillain-Barré. That's a relative contraindication to vaccinating the other children because it appears to have a familial tint. We don't know that it's a true genetic issue. We haven't isolated a gene, as far as I know. Maybe someone did yesterday, but you should have a waiver. Now, you know, there's controversial therapies that people take, like hydroxychloroquine or ivermectin. You know, I have been known to prescribe ivermectin to people to have on them in case they get coronavirus. Some of the studies that were done, small number studies in India and Mexico, seemed to show in patients with a study size of 100 or less that ivermectin, distributed these kits and they gave a certain amount of ivermectin on day one. You know, just as soon as you have symptoms, you're around somebody, you take it, and then you take it again a week later, that it decreased hospitalization by 70 to 80% or more.
Oh, boy.
And so there's a lot of people who really firmly believe that ivermectin is very important, early therapeutic. Everything that we've got, almost nothing works late. You know, even remdesivir, you know, the intravenous medicine, you want to be on this stuff early. So there's a window of opportunity for hydroxychloroquine, window of opportunity for ivermectin, and it's early, not late. But that would be something to discuss with your doctor. But there are some strategies not accepted by the general medical community that do have a lot of supportive studies, although the studies are not the most perfect, elegant, high-powered studies. They appear to be overwhelmingly supportive of the use of some of these agents.
This is really important information Dr. Tabali is giving you. And all of you on hold right now on the phones, I'm going to try to get to as many calls as I can for Dr. Robert Tabali on coronavirus, COVID-19 and the Delta variant, the vaccines, mask mandates, and questions you have. You've heard different situations, doctor, people calling saying, I have this, I've had that, my husband has this. Should I or he or this other person under these circumstances get the vaccine and or not? And we have other callers with other questions of a similar sort. Under these circumstances, is the vaccine advisable? Under this set of circumstances, they have really important questions, and they're good questions. Because for everyone who asks that, there are many people listening across the country with the same question. So we'll get to you as soon as I can. I'll try to get as many of you in for Dr. Robert Tabali. I'm Sheila Logmanis, in for Drew today as he's off on a few days' break. And we'll be right back with your calls, 888-914-9149. I'll get you all in as to the best of my ability. Next.
Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the relevant radio studio line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forester.
Thank you so much for being there.
What the mainstream media isn't saying.
Your show is always relevant.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
I'm really glad you have this on your show today.
Welcome back to the Drew Mariani Show. I'm Sheila Logmanis, and what we have on the show right now is Dr. Robert Tabali. He practices in adult and pediatric infectious disease in the northwest suburbs of Chicago. He's also a clinical assistant professor of medicine at the University of Illinois, answering your questions about COVID-19, the Delta variant, vaccinations, especially those questions. And doctor, as I said, I'm going to try to get to as many of the callers as I can. So we're going to go to Rose in Philadelphia, who's been holding. Thanks for holding, Rose. Go ahead.
All right. Well, thank you so much for taking my call. Mm-hmm. And doctor, I was listening to a program today. LifeSite News had a number of doctors talking about the vaccine. And one of the points that they brought up was the fact that they say it's okay to give it to pregnant women, which is something, from what I understand, was never done before. They were always very cautious about giving vaccines to pregnant women, especially in the first trimester. And then he mentioned the Japanese study. I don't have my notes with me, but it's something to the effect that the spike protein or the mRNA kind of left the muscle cells, and it had it loaded up in the ovaries of the women 20 times over the load that was. This was in not women. This was a study that was done in rats in the Japanese study. And they said there's no other studies to contradict that yet. So they think that that's what we should believe will happen with women too, is with this overload concentrated in the ovaries.
Doctor, what about recommending vaccines for COVID-19 to pregnant women?
Well, pregnant women are at higher risk of death or severe illness with COVID-19 compared to the rest of the general population, because pregnancy, most people don't realize this, but pregnancy is an immune-compromised state, because the baby is just like having a transplanted organ. It's different than the mother. You know, the antigenically tissue is different than the mother. And when a mother becomes pregnant, her immune system downregulates so as not to reject the baby. Early on, there were some studies that came from Northwestern here in Chicago about placentas in women who have had natural COVID infection. And there were micro-infarcts in the placenta, probably, you know, as we understand now, due to microscopic or microvessel blood clots. The COVID infection, natural COVID infection in pregnant women, oftentimes precipitates preterm labor, but it did not seem to be a cause of you know, fetal mortality or fetal demise. So I was asked this question about giving vaccines a year ago, and I said, absolutely not. You shouldn't give it to a pregnant woman, back in April of last year, or, you know, when the vaccines first came out, because they hadn't been studied at that point. But then a caller who was a nurse said, oh, we give them to, you know, pregnant women all the time. But most OBs in our area, because of the litigious area that I live in, most OBs don't give vaccines to a woman while they're pregnant, over the concern that it could stimulate a miscarriage, which would be an event that everyone would want to avoid. But since that comment a year ago plus, studies have come out that show that the vaccines are, you know, safe and effective in pregnant women. And women, like I say, if they get a natural infection, there's much more potential for a serious problem and harm than not getting vaccinated. In order to prevent a problem during pregnancy, getting vaccinated could help, especially in a time of great prevalence like we're entering into. We're early on this curve right now. The national numbers are rising steadily on an exponential rate, and so 2 weeks ago, we were having like 8,000 to 10,000 to 15,000 cases a day. Now, today, I think yesterday's data was 130,000 average cases a day are being identified. And that's with multiple states not reporting now. Some states don't report except once a week. So we're probably going to, you know, be trending up towards several hundred thousand cases a day. We're heading into a period of high incidence. And if you're pregnant at this time, you know, I don't want to worry anybody that is, but, you know, you want to make sure you're taking the vitamin D, which is not going to harm your baby. And, you know, you're going to want to avoid exposures. And, you know, we're unfortunately going to be in the middle of this expansion of Delta virus for the next, at least the next month or two. And you're going to want to avoid that. And if you choose to be vaccinated, you know, the odds are that you're going to do fine with the vaccine and that would be protective compared to if you got natural infection during pregnancy. But that's a personal, at this point in time, that's a personal decision for everybody to make. You know, you want to talk it over with your doctor. Some women have underlying medical conditions where, you know, on superimposed on pregnancy, which would make you want to be vaccinated, especially in the face of being pregnant. But, you know, as far as the spike protein concentrating in the ovaries and testicles, I've seen, you know, reports about that, but then I've seen other reports that you know, are directly in contradiction to that. And while I applaud a lot of what LifeSite News does, I mean, I actually have contacted them and explained to them that I'm very troubled by some of the stuff that they talk about with the vaccines and stuff that I don't recognize as being accurate. But I, like I say, I applaud a lot of the stuff that they do, and I think they're good people doing good things. But I'm not sure that all the information, you know, that they disseminate is perfectly accurate. I think a lot of it might be biased. I know some of the people that they've had talk at their conferences are, you know, lifelong anti-vax, you know, and just don't want. People ask me, you know, I'm an infection doctor. You know, when's the last time you saw somebody with Haemophilus influenza meningitis? You know, the meningitis that kids would get and they would go deaf, like Miss America from, 10, 15 years ago. She was deaf, if you recall. I don't remember her name. But she had a certain type of meningitis when she was a child. We don't see that anymore. It was a huge cause of infant mortality in the United States. When you compare it to all causes of infant mortality, you know, this type of meningitis is very, very common. We don't see it anymore because of vaccinations. We don't see polio in the United States. You know, right. We don't have 400 to 800 kids a year dying from measles every year because of vaccines. So, I'm very pro-vaccine, but I understand that it's a personal decision and there's risks and benefits to be weighed for everyone. Mm. But
yes,
you know, if a pregnant woman asked me, you know, would I benefit from a vaccine with respect to coronavirus, I would tell her, you know, the data would show that if you got coronavirus, you'd be at higher risk from natural infection than you would be from a vaccine. So,
a lot of people have a lot of good questions here. Daniel's got a good question. I'm going to go to him next in California. But before I do, Dr. Tabali, other listeners have called in and asked a very good question of how they can reach you. Are you able to tell people right now how they can reach you?
Well, my website is germbusters.com.
That's a good one.
GermBusters.com. I'm actually starting a new practice, the St. Roque Center, you know, focused on Lyme disease. We don't have the website up there. But my office number is 847-741-GERM, 4376. 847-741-4376. If you leave a message, I'll get back to you. I'm kind of overwhelmed a lot now, but I will get back to you eventually.
I can understand how you're overwhelmed right now. And Daniel from California, since we have such a lack of time, let me ask this question for you because I think it's a really good one, especially since we're in summer and people really want to travel. He wants to know if fully vaccinated people can safely travel at this time, doctor.
I think so, yes. Now, as long as the people that you're talking about aren't organ transplant patients or history of lymphoma or leukemia, because those patients oftentimes don't respond to the vaccine as you would expect. But as long as you're kind of a normal person, you've been fully vaccinated, I think you can travel fine. I would continue the precautions, you know, in the locales that they tell you to do. But I don't think you need to worry about traveling.
Yeah, because so many people are. And then on that note, you when you go through airports and get on planes, you have to mask anyway. So right now we're hearing by the day more mask mandates coming out, even from the CDC, for people who have been vaccinated and even indoors. What are your thoughts on that right now before we run out of time?
Well, you know, you really don't have any choice when you're on a plane. You're really kind of a captive.
Oh, a plane, of course. Yeah, yeah.
And if you, there was a gentleman that was duct taped to a seat the other day, and one of my patients just got back from Zambia. He just got back 5 hours ago. He flew back. People were refusing to get put masks on, and they were told that if they didn't put a mask on, they'd be taken off the plane. And the fine in Zambia for not following that is $35,000 U.S.
Oh, my gosh.
So,
oh wow! See
yeah,
there.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, and there's one former Obama aide that's calling for a no fly list for people that are unvaccinated, and certainly unruly people who refuse to be vaccinated. A 2 year old or a 1 year old is a different story than an adult. You know, I think that they ought to be forgiving of the young kids that can't do it. But yeah, wear the mask if they tell you to. We're not lemmings. We're just trying, you know, it's a difficult position the public health people are in because they want to try to prevent a lot of deaths. And sometimes they push things
safe
that aren't 100%. So,
well, we just want to keep everyone safe. We want you all to be well. And we want all of us to do the moral thing, and that's to help others stay well. Dr. Tabala, you are so helpful to all of us, to everyone listening, to those who didn't even call in but got their question asked by somebody who did. And those of you who didn't, you want to know where Dr. Tabala can be found. Germbusters.com. That is easy to remember. Dr. Tabala, thank you.